Good morning, everybody. This is Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Good to have you with us. The other morning, I heard this report. It was on National Public Radio, as a matter of fact, about the report was basically about, do women need periods? And so I was kind of struck by it and listening very intently when it said that more women in their 20s and 30s are choosing contraception that may suppress their menstrual cycles than ever before. And one of the physicians on the show interviewed said, Dr. Mix, Elizabeth Mix, said, that need to have regular periods is not just in our society anymore. There's absolutely no medical need to have a period when you're on contraception. But other physicians have been saying that this is playing roulette. Dr. Susan Rako from Boston says, call it the largest uncontrolled experiment in the history of medical science. So we're going to wrestle with that today because it's not a minor issue. And in the first what we hope will be our continuing series on women's health here on the Mark Steiner Show, we're joined by Dr. Jennifer Williams, Assistant Professor of English and Women's and Gender Studies here at Morgan State University. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And let's welcome to Baltimore and to the show Dr. Claudia Richardson, who is the new Medical Director at Planned Parenthood of Maryland. And welcome, Doctor. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to Facebook pages, 410-319-8888 to join us here for this conversation. So this is really – really, I was reading all this literature early this morning and now kind of think this through, Dr. Richardson. It's just – and it's interesting we are in a society now where – many young women saying this, it's unnecessary. I don't need my period. Why should I have to have it? Why should I have to go through it? And these birth control pills and different birth control devices are making it almost unnecessary. So, and your organization is in the thick of that, I would imagine.
Yes. Well, we now know that women can use contraception. We use contraceptive and hormones that are used for contraception for many things. We use it for cycle control, and we also use it for birth control. So now we have these great methods that are long-acting that allow women to have a bit more control over their reproductive lives, and we're so glad to have these. Over my career, I've watched this whole process and these methods evolve. So it's wonderful now that women have these choices to have a little bit more control over their lives and their periods and their reproductive lives.
So I you know, when I read some pieces, it was interesting to me that people who have done anthropological studies of this, one of the things that came out of one of the studies that I was reading this morning was that women, especially in the quote-unquote hunter-gatherer era, may have had 140 periods over the course of their lives. Women in today's world had 450. That the nature of women's lives is very different in terms of having fewer children than then. That women also during in the kind of changes we have now. As I said, don't have to breastfeed for much shorter periods of time. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole change here in kind of the gender dynamic. It's medicine, but it's also a gender dynamic.
Right. I totally agree. This is Jennifer Williams.
I'm sorry.
Agree with Dr. Richardson that it's wonderful that this whole range of opportunities are open for women to have control over their reproductive freedom. But in terms of comparing anthropological studies to today, you have one that's environmental and natural changes that we've gone through, and the other that's medical and hormonal. So when I heard the story the other day, I was wondering what some of the long-term side effects could be, especially if young women started doing hormonal therapies at a younger age, like over time, what that could kind of be. Because we've seen with our prolonged periods or, you know, like shorter nursing practices with women who mother, some of those changes just have to do with modernity and modernization. And so I'm not sure with, you know, the hormonal shifts that take place with the use of birth control over long periods of time, what kind of effect that can have.
So that, go ahead, please.
Excuse me. Well, the good news is that quite frankly, some of these hormone therapies have been around for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Depo-Provera is one of them. Depo-Provera, which is a hormone, a progesterone-only hormone, has been around for a very long time. At one point, we did think that there were some concerns about bone loss with long-term use. However, now we are more comfortable with knowing that when women are discontinued Depo-Provera use, that bone mineralization can return. So some of those long-term effects that we've had concerns about through the years, we're less concerned about them today. And those medicines have been around for a long period of time. The more interesting thing is that the IUDs mm-hmm. that we use now, the implants, they have less hormone that is actually going into the bloodstream mm-hmm. These days. So we don't anticipate those long-term effects that you may have heard about in the past.
Mm-hmm. But here's a question I have about that. So there was one person quoted in this report, before I go into the other reports I was reading, Geraldine Pryor, who's an endocrinologist from the University of British Columbia, said that the in terms of lessening a woman's menstruation cycles, that they don't know the effects of what would happen on bone or bone density. They may on the device itself, but not on what it means to curtail and change the nature of a woman's period. I mean, what about those kind of questions?
And Dr. Richardson is the medical doctor here, I have to say. I can imagine that women are going to have really good relationships with their doctors, women who make this decision just to continually check up on the progression and, like, the way that it impacts different kinds of bodies. Because, of course, some women are more prone to have blood clots than others. And so that seems like that's something that also needs to be established before someone goes on, like, a long-term regimen of hormonal therapies. Like birth control.
Well, the interesting thing about that uh-huh. is that what we really have to consider is that pregnancy in and of itself can mm-hmm. puts us at risk for blood clots and the medical concerns. So although pregnancy is a normal thing for women and for society, it can cause a risk, some of the same risk that you're talking about. And the good news is that some of the methods that we're talking about, what we call LARC, or long-acting contraceptives, mm-hmm. they have a decreased risk than maybe the traditional birth control pills that women tend to think about from years ago.
So one of the things, so this generation, I mean, this is the generation of women in their 20s, mm-hmm. the teens and 20s are the women who really, this is really affecting more than others, because it's there's a whole new move afoot. We're saying, and more and more women are saying, "I'm free of this stuff. I don't have to go through this anymore." Mm-hmm. And that so it becomes this kind of psychological liberation as well, right? That takes place. That's what you're feeling and hearing in all the interviews and articles people are writing. That this is, you know, this is something that may be biological, but as women's role and rights change in society, equality is pushed, that this becomes almost part of the spectrum of what that means.
Well, we have two things going on here. We have we're talking about periods on the one hand, but the bigger picture is that most women are seeking this for controlling their reproductive life plan or having some control there. So we can't just lump that all without considering the benefits and of being able to control when you want to have children. So we can't just talk about the period without talking about the benefit.
Can women have birth control that does not affect the nature of their period?
Well, all birth control, hormonal birth control, is sort of what we call manipulating hormones. So, no, all hormonal contraception, yes, except for the hormonal. So we do have the IUD, one of the IUDs, the Paragard IUD, which has no hormones in it, and it works a different way. But all of the hormonal methods do. The issue is whether a woman chooses to have what we call a withdrawal bleed, or some people call a fake period.
Right, right, right.
Or not. And the medical truth is that you do not need to have a withdrawal bleed or a period. It's not necessary to have a period.
So what do you think this does, Jennifer, psychologically? I mean, just in terms of the change in how women think of themselves about where this might take us in this 21st century.
Yeah, like I imagine that it does liberate women to feel free that they can, you know, maybe be more active and, you know, have access to a different way of life without having to have periods every month. One of the questions that I was thinking about when I was listening to this piece is how it might impact people who suffer from uterine fibroids, which is like disproportionately impacts African American women. And I know that one of the side effects is excessive bleeding. So I wondered if they chose one of these therapies, could that also be beneficial?
Do we know anything about that?
Are you asking if a hormonal contraception can help women
mm-hmm.
with fibroids?
Yeah.
Well, certainly we use and have used hormonal therapy mm-hmm. to control the bleeding associated mm-hmm. with fibroids. It may work, it may not work, but it can be beneficial mm-hmm. At times. So we do use it.
Yeah, that's the first thing that popped into my mind, that, like, you know, that's a cessation of excessive bleeding for women, I think, can always be beneficial. And, like, I heard exactly what Dr. Richardson had heard, that, you know, on birth control, women don't need to have periods, that fake period, real periods or whatever. So I don't see why anyone wouldn't take advantage of that opportunity.
So there's some issues I want to raise, but I just want to hear from our listeners as well. I mean, I'd like to kind of discuss for a moment the range of new forms of control that are really available to women now that were never, and how that changes the whole world for men and women and who we are. And also, folks, join us with your stories and questions. 410-319-8888. Write to us here by email to talk@sinoshow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but 410-319-8888. Log on to our Facebook pages. But bring your own thoughts and ideas to this and what you think is going on here in our society and medically and what your own experiences are, your own questions, 410-319-8888. In the 60s, it was birth control pills. That was it, right? But that changed the nature of male-female relationships and changed women's roles in many ways. So where are we now? I mean, it seems like there's a plethora of options.
Yeah, it is indeed an exciting time. As I told you earlier, I've been doing this for a while. And
I should say, you're not just medical director, you're an OBGYN
as
well, right?
Yes, yes. Right. And I've watched this these options evolve, and it's quite exciting to be able to offer these different methods. We have the IUD or IUC, which is an intrauterine device. We have two of those. We have the implant, which is lasts for 3 years, a progesterone only. And we have the Depo-Provera along with the birth control pills.
Which was a lot of controversy around when it first came out.
Which one of
Depro.
Those? Yes, it has been, but it's been around so long, and quite frankly, it was used to manage periods for women who were unable to take care of themselves in one period of time way mm-hmm. before. So the medication has been around for many, many years, mm-hmm. and we have lots of experience with it.
And I was going to say, as an educator, I have a couple of concerns, like how do we let certain kinds of, like, communities of color, people in marginalized communities know that they have access to all of these, you know, like all of these new opportunities to plan their reproductive health care. That's one concern I have. And a second concern is how can we also inform those communities about the safety of it? Because, you know, we were talking outside about some of the distrust that, you know, communities of color, working class women have of medical technologies.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. Education is key. Mm-hmm. And I will say that there have been studies done, in, I think, in St. Louis, where when women are educated and given choice, they choose LARC. They choose a long-acting methods, which is quite exciting. But we, you know, certainly at Planned Parenthood of Maryland, we do lots of education. Anyone who's been in our doors will let you know that we give them lots of education and discuss the options. And, of course, the bottom line is their choice. And we do discuss the benefits and the risk and give them the choice.
And I would say you've been doing it forever. When my oldest daughters were in their teens in the 80s, the first place we took them was Planned Parenthood. To sit down and find out what the real world is about.
That's, and we're glad we're there.
So, but there's also the theories about the conspiracy theories, about what this birth control is doing in communities of color, especially, and B, the contraception and birth control are also under attack. I mean, across the country.
Oh, I was
Jennifer, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, even I have spoken to even like college-aged girls who have asked me about Planned Parenthood and its history in Black communities and whether or not it's true that Margaret Sanger was out to sterilize Black communities. I'm like, no, no.
She's like, actually a friend of Tina W.E.B. Du Bois.
We're buddies. And so I mean, and these are college-educated young women who need to know that they have access to, you know, reproductive health care. And so I wonder, like, how do we get women to the door when these conspiracies are swirling around and when they're nervous that they're going to go and then come out sterilized.
I understand that, and there are many reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there were issues with sterilization back in the 70s, and women getting sterilized without their consent. So we know where those thoughts come from. Also, the Dalkon Shield many, many years ago. We still have to educate our patients about the stigma. They call it the Dalkon Shield stigma, actually, and really discussing with them that the literature and the studies now say that IUDs are quite safe. Mm-hmm. Over my career, I've watched that process evolve. When I was in residency many years ago, we didn't offer IUDs to women who had not had children or who had a history of a pelvic infection or were not in a monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. And now those criteria have changed, and that's exciting. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of studies that show that they're safe in those populations.
Let's go to the phone. 410-319-8888. I had a thought, but I'll hold my thought. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts for our guests, Dr. Jennifer Williams, Dr. Claudia Richardson. Dr. Williams is Assistant Professor of English and Women's Gender Studies here at Morgan State University. Dr. Claudia Richardson is a OBGYN who's Medical Director of Planned Parenthood of Maryland. 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner and write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. Sue and Towson, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I agree with Dr. Richardson. We have many years of history, and I know from my own personal history with hormones for birth control and replacement therapy. And I have positive experience, and to my knowledge, the record is good on any side effects and long-term effects. We certainly have many people that have been on hormone replacement and birth control for many years. So I just had a question on that.
Sure.
I just have many years of good data. Thank you.
And what was your question? Sue, are you still there?
Expanding on the many years of data that we have on women like me with many, many years, decades of using hormone therapy and birth control. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I agree with Sue. We have lots of experience, and that's one reason why we have so many options these days, because we're basing this ability to create new methods on experience because we've had so many years of experience. So birth control is safe, and we need situations like this to help us get that message out so that women will continue to seek birth control. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I know you all have heard the exciting news about the Contraceptive Equity Act of Maryland, and I'm so excited to be living in Maryland now and watch this legislation come forth.
Yeah, what is that?
So it actually is the most comprehensive bill regarding coverage of birth control in the whole country. Decreases the barriers for many of our patients. Women can get birth control methods, pills, actually for up to 6 months. In the past, that's been 1 month at a time. Every now and then, an insurance company would allow a patient to get three at a time, but now they can get up to 6 months at a time. Vasectomies are covered now, no copay for pills or for vasectomy, and in the past, it has been very difficult at times to get insurance coverage for long-term methods such as IUDs and the implant. A woman would have to get insurance to pre-authorize it. So now they can get all of that on the same day, and that's great.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that I was thinking about this a moment ago as we were talking about this debate. The very first show we ever did on the Mark Steiner Show in March of 1993 was a debate on Norplant. and it's fascinating what we've come to in that 23 years since that first debate, which I think was in many ways built around the deep mistrust that many people have of our medical systems and black women and communities of color. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's part of the battle still. You were mentioning that a moment ago.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think the mistrust, of course, it has some, it's not irrational. It has basis in history. And so I think that's why the education component is so important, like to bring representatives from Planned Parenthood out into communities so that they can talk, especially to college-aged women, about their options, about the history, about the progress that has been made in medical technology and reproductive technologies, so that they know all of the facts, you know, so that they know the pros and the cons, the past and like the present of where we come to.
Let me open the phones again, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts and ideas. Phyllis in Pikesville, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I really just wanted to, I want to say good morning to your panel as well.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask a question about the homeless population. I work for an organization in Baltimore called Marion House, and we offer transitional housing to homeless women and children. And we've been getting a lot of referrals from young women with like 4 and 5 children, almost to the point of they're giving birth every single year. And so I was just wondering, what are you doing to educate the young women in particular in the homeless population so that they, you know, can control the number of births or so that they'll have this information about Planned Parenthood? Because it's so overwhelming for these women to even, you know how to get back on their feet if they have to parent, you know, children, and many of them aren't even weren't parented themselves. So I was just wondering about access to the homelessness population.
That's a really interesting question.
That is a good question. Certainly we offer care no matter what at Planned Parenthood. And certainly we can educate those potential patients, those women, regarding their different methods. We do have an educational department that does go out into certain communities. I'm not sure exactly about that particular population. However, please call us. We love to get out into the community and serve and to educate. And once we do that, those women that can come in and get what they need.
I think that's really important. I mean, groups like Marion House, other people that work with women, homeless women and children, I mean, they should be in direct touch with Planned Parenthood and get that relationship going so the women that are in their homes can actually have the service they need that they don't get.
Yeah. I imagine they're going to have access to insurance as well. I mean, even with Obamacare, not everyone. I mean, if you don't have an address, how do you sign up for insurance?
Well, we work real hard at Planned Parenthood to remove the barriers. We are a Title X provider, so we do believe in care no matter what. We want those women to come and get what they need at Planned Parenthood.
We're going to take a short break and come right back. We have more questions, your thoughts at 410-319-8888 as we explore this new world of contraception that so many women in our society, young women especially in their teens, 20s, and 30s, are free of their periods. What does that really mean? We're going to get back to that particular issue when we come back from this break. We're here with Dr. Jennifer Williams and Dr. Claudia Richardson and you at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're here with Dr. Claudia Richardson, who is an OBGYN and medical director of Planned Parenthood of Maryland, just recently a job coming up from North Carolina. We'll welcome her to Baltimore and to WEAA. Dr. Jennifer Williams, assistant professor of English and Women's and Gender Studies at Morgan State University, and you at 410-319-8888. Let me come back to where I began this program. We're going to wrestle with this one particular issue in terms of this huge trend in America where young women are saying that we no longer have to be burdened by or tied down by our menstrual periods and stopping us from doing the things we want to do. In one of the articles I was reading, there was this woman, Dr. Susan Rako, who is a psychiatrist in Boston. I forget the name of her book, but she wrote a book on the risks of menstrual suppression. And this is what she posits, and just see what you all think. She said, as I said earlier at the top of the hour, she called it the largest uncontrolled experiment in the history of medical science. She and others in that book say that they worry about women's hormonal levels. She said oral contraceptives cause a drop in testosterone, which affects libido, bone strength, and heart health. And less frequent menstruation, they argue, may prevent ovarian cancer, but long-term use of estrogen has been linked to breast cancer. And we don't know how fertility is affected after long-term menstrual suppression. And so the argument that we just do not know what this new social move, really what the consequences are biologically of these new social moves of women not being, quote-unquote, burdened by menstrual periods. So, I mean, how do we respond to that? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, as you know, in medicine and medical literature, you can hear things on one side of the coin.
Right.
And these methods have been studied. They've been studied for many years, and they are safe. And we present all women, we educate them on the benefits and the risk, and allow them to make a choice about that. So, again, we really need to be careful when we're talking about contraception and then we're talking about suppression of the period.
But don't allow the modern contraceptive methods, they suppress the period, right?
Many of them do. However, they are all hormones. They're all hormones. The ones that suppress the period and the ones who don't suppress the period, they're all hormones. And birth control has been around for many hormonal birth control has been around for many years. So I'd be careful just to run with that one account of the questioning of this. We also have women who are taking advantage of being able to not be pregnant when they don't want to be, or when pills may offer challenges or barriers. Some women don't do well taking a pill every day. So they would prefer to have as I've heard, set and forget method, a method that they don't have to think about. So our lives have gotten more complicated. Mm-hmm. The lives of women have gotten more complicated in modern times. So we really have to look at what offers the best quality of life for each individual. Mm-hmm. And
so what kind of questions does that raise for you, if any, Jennifer?
I was going to say, on the other hand, I don't think, of course, there's no medication without risks. Like, all medications have risks, and people just have to be informed of what those risks are, what the advantages are, and then also cultivate good relationships with medical practitioners, which I know sometimes can be a challenge depending on age, depending on race. And I think, you know, there needs to be some more concerted efforts to cultivate good medical care and medical attention toward women. I mean, I mentioned like something like uterine fibroids earlier. There's so many misconceptions about that. There's distrust. There are women who've had unnecessary hysterectomies because of that. I mean, so how do we get, like, not just get the women to the door to get the information, but then also to cultivate like relationships with practitioners, and how do we get practitioners that really care about women?
And that's saying, I mean, since this is becoming a huge medical and social trend, mm-hmm. and I don't mean the birth control part. I mean just women saying, young women saying, we don't want menstrual periods anymore. Mm-hmm. Leave us alone. leave me alone. But do we need more study, though, about the long-term effects of that? Not birth control, but with the long-term effects of ending menstrual periods might mean for the body.
Again, getting back to the hormonal piece, we those hormones have been around for long periods of time, and we feel very confident in the benefits and the risk of that. Long term psychologically, I think that's a question for Dr. Williams. I do know in my many years of practicing, some women felt very strongly about seeing whether that withdrawal bleed, that fake period,
yeah.
as it's been referenced, and then others don't. So again, it all comes down to choice and quality of life for these types of birth control that are safe mm-hmm. and have been safe for many years.
Jennifer, do you want to comment on that as well?
No. Okay. I agree.
410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Lavana in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Lavana, you there? Lavana? Hello? Must have walked away from the phone for a minute. Lavana? Hello, you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I felt like I had to call in because I have a perspective that's a little different, and it's based on a lot of years of being a therapist to many women and also studying larger groups of women. In the 70s and 80s, one of the things, because I also worked with women who have studied this, one of the things we realized about the relationship that a woman has to her period is that the more it's seen as a nuisance, an imposition, the more a woman is cut off from her sense of any natural connection to rhythms on the planet. And it's consistent with a whole lot of other ways that our society has kind of mechanized the world and mechanized the human being. And is very much connected to the problems we're having now. This is going to be a leap. The problems we're having now on the planet in terms of having so little sense of what's the natural process that we have been riding roughshod over all of it, and the result is disastrous. Traditionally, in cultures around the world, that 3 to 5 to 7 days when a woman was menstruating was a really important focal place in culture. It was a time that she could honor her place in nature. And this is, I'm saying this from, this is a woman who is vigorously, I can't overstate how strongly I feel about women having control over whether or not they have children. That's so fundamental. It's transformed the possibilities for women. And I think it's really critical that we also come back to the issue that you keep coming back to, the implication of a woman being encouraged to see her period as a nuisance in her way. The implications of that are really profound in terms of the human's relationship to the rest of the web of life.
So, Levon, it's really important. I'm glad you raised the issue. Let me talk to Dr. Williams first. I mean, as a person who kind of ponders this issues of gender. So.
Wow, yeah. I mean, thank you for that comment. No, and I totally agree in part as a person that is, I'm tilted toward natural medicine, acupuncture, et cetera. I think first off, I think the decision to make the choice to not have a period if one doesn't want to for whatever reasons, I think is at the forefront of the discussion. But I do agree that, you know, that these natural processes that women go through should not, we could shift the conversation so that it's not framed as an imposition or framed as like a sort of burden. I mean, if we really dig into the anthropology of it, there's so many negative associations with women's processes. I mean,
in this patriarchal world, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And at the same time, right. Then, you know, we do have to think about how culture evolves and changes too. I mean, there are no menstrual huts anymore either.
Thank you for mentioning that evolution, if you will, through the years. Again, we really want to be careful when we talk about the reason women, young women, older women seek these methods. They're seeking them for contraception for the most part. There are times that we give birth control methods or the hormones that are traditionally used for birth control to help with the cycle. Many women have debilitating cycles that put them they can't function in their normal roles because their cycles are so debilitating. And especially as you were talking about some of the history and mistrust about hysterectomies and things like that, especially in women of color, these hormones are liberating, if you will. They allow women to control their cycle because their cycles have been unbearable through medication and not surgery. And allow them to choose that, or if they don't like it, they can discontinue it whenever they want to.
Stephanie chatted in, I don't really think that the biggest motivator for young women getting on birth control is to get rid of their periods. It's, in my experience, birth control affects people completely differently, differently down to the person. Most young women who want to get most women won't want to get pregnant, and a lot of young women get periods so severe that birth control helps to make their periods more mild, but they still get their periods. A lot of people who have really irregular periods and use birth control to help help regulate them. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, she sort of echoes what I was just saying, quite frankly. That was a great way to put that.
Yeah, like the birth control method is at the forefront. And then the positive side effect for some people could be the cessation of the periods.
Let me go to the phones before I have another question, kind of follow up on both what this chat said and both what our last caller, Levana, said. 410-319-8888. Brittany, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, welcome. Hi, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to kind of give my account of birth control. I was put on it because I wasn't regular. And I was about 18 at the time. When I was put on, I noticed my body going through these changes. Yes, I was kind of like having one regularly every month, but it was more so to the fact that my body I don't want to say it shut down, but it didn't feel good, one. And then two, I started getting these like marks on my body and freckles and whatnot. And I read the side effects. And if you guys know, it's a little tiny piece of paper that comes with birth control. When you open it up, it's small script. You have to read with a magnifying glass. And of course, literally it goes from the top of my head to, like, my navel. That's how long it is, front and back. So when I sat there and read it, I took my immediately because I realized that there is a war on our womb. All of the things that it causes, cancer, death, it's not safe. And what I also noticed is that I think it was Bill Gates? I'm not sure, but he said that if we work hard on healthcare, we can minimize the population level within the world. And I think that's a part of that agenda to actually stop us from reproducing. And it also goes back to your last caller when she said it takes you out of the rhythm of life and of nature. In certain cultures, it's seen, or our menstrual cycle is seen as a spiritual thing. And in this culture, it's kind of disregarded. And religion is kind of seen as a dirty thing, an unclean thing. So it's so many different variations throughout different cultures and different norms. But that's my account, and I feel like it actually wages war on a woman's womb, regardless of if she can, sustain her purpose of giving life or not, or when she has the choice to. I think there are different methods.
But Brittany, we have one quick question before I turn to our guest to respond. So, but that are you arguing? I understand the argument you're making, which is a very strong argument. Is that also an argument against the use of birth control? Period.
Yes. I think there are different methods. There are different methods, and I am against it. Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure to get that out. Get that clear. Dr. Richardson.
The good news is that these newer methods, the long-acting methods, can be removed and a woman's fertility can return very quickly. So the bottom line is that it remains a choice. For example, the Paragard can last 10 to 12 years. That's the copper IUD. If a woman wants to have that removed in 3 years, that's her right, and her fertility can be restored quickly. The biggest thing is that women have the choice. They have the absolute choice. If they don't want to use contraception, that is absolutely their choice. Regarding the birth control pills and side effects, as Dr. Williams said, all medications have benefits and risks, and we do a good job of explaining those benefits and risks to patients. Certainly, the good thing is that we have more options for patients. One birth control pill may work for one person. They may have some side effects with that, and we can switch them to a different birth control. Also, that's one of the great things about the new bill, because many times providers had that as a barrier. They had to sort of pick and choose what was available per the insurance company, and now we can switch from one birth control pill to another.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a quick call in here before we have to move on to the next segment. 410-319-8888. Pam, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to piggyback on the last caller and just kind of like reiterate the fact that I believe that there is a national call for controlling the population, the growth of population. And I don't believe, because I think that a lot of the people who are doing this are in charge of this are males, and they're not considering, you know, what kind of complications that it's going to create for the females down the line, because anything that is natural form, that is not a natural form of birth control and won't allow the uterus to shred on its natural 28-day cycle, would be detrimental for the woman in the long run. And these people really don't care. They just want to eliminate folks as soon as they can and as quickly as they can. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me just wrestle with this last part, because this is really important stuff. And I think that I was thinking two names popped in my head. One was Fannie Lou Hamer. The other was Gloria Steinem. Mm-hmm. Just that as two women of the 60s who kind of opened this idea of the women's movement and women's power, mm-hmm. in many ways that launched everything from the 60s on. And I think Jennifer Williams, in some ways, I mean, in this, what the last two callers is engendering this conversation maybe we should have, which is the notion of population control and controlling people of color, mm-hmm. on the other side being birth control, giving women control over their lives and their own power. I mean, that seems to be a dichotomy here in many people's minds.
Right, absolutely. Because there are, I mean, men are also trying to control women's access to abortion, you know. So, and I think, you know, at the forefront of it is women's right to choose to have children, not to have children, to parent children. You know, I'm thinking about the reproductive justice platform. And women can choose not to women should be able to choose not to have children or to plan when they want to have children and how many they want to have. And even before the 60s, I mean, activists in the 20s like Angelina Will Grimke was a supporter of Planned Parenthood. I know there's a history, and it seems like there's certainly war on Black women's bodies in the history. And I know that's, you know, it's not without context, but at the same time, women should have access to all of these different kinds of reproductive technologies.
Final thought, Dr. Richardson, before we have to move on?
No, I just again, want to always bring it back to choice. We want to give women the choice to choose their reproductive life plan and to take advantage of all the technology that we have available. And we want to decrease and get rid of the barriers that prohibit them to do that.
This has been fascinating, and I'm so happy the two of you came today, and that we will begin this conversation monthly, I think, here on the Mark Steiner Show. We talked about this morning on women's health and women's issues, which I think are very critical. I think we ought to have this conversation back and forth about the notion of population control versus controlling communities of color versus the notion of birth control, which is giving women control over their lives and how that's changed the nature of women's lives in the world. I think that's one of those really important things for us to wrestle
with. Absolutely. Conversation.
So Dr. Claudia Richardson, Medical Director of Planned Parenthood of Maryland. Once again, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show and welcome to Baltimore. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jennifer Williams, always great to see you and have you in the studio. Assistant Professor of English and Women and Gender Studies here at Morgan State University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for calling in. Sorry we couldn't get these last couple calls that came in. We have to switch gears and talk about an interesting little film festival coming up tomorrow night, or is it tonight? We'll tell you all about that in just a second.